This is an iHeart podcast.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these failure drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Gets you 10% off.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Do you ever read about certain situations in history or in the world today and say to yourself, there's no way I have that kind of courage inside of me? I do. I'd like to think otherwise because obviously I'm Jesse Steele Kelly. What, Chris? The sombrero? The Shogun. But sometimes when I'm doing some reading for the show and we have an awesome show today. We're going to talk about something the left is preparing already for you. One of Joe Biden's new cabinet picks. And oh my gosh, you're not going to believe what it is. And salmon. We have all that on tap. But as I do prep every now and then for the show or do some reading for history, I find myself like I'll read something and I'll just take a step back and put myself there and say, I don't think I could do it. Whatever that is inside of that person is not something I possess. And that's not just because I'm a sociopath. I just don't think I could do it. But we will get to that moment in a little bit. Like I said, we have quite a show today. They have gone so far over the top with this inauguration security stuff. It's nauseating. We'll get to that. We'll get to some huge Black Lives Matter hypocrisy. I saw something yesterday, made my jaw drop. But beyond all that, let us begin back in the 1800s, the early 1800s. And we have told Napoleon stories on this show before. We'll tell them again, but this isn't really a Napoleon story today. It's just kind of his army. There was something called the Peninsula War. And this was essentially Napoleon continuing to stomp through Europe like a blowtorch through butter. The Iberian Peninsula, you know, Spain and Portugal, is one of those areas that has always been under conflict of some kind. Always. There's always seems to be a civil war there, or they're fighting each other, or they're fighting everyone else. And it's because, I mean, look, we've talked about this before, about the history of, well, we've talked before about the history of weather, right? The history of geography, we've talked about that too. Look at Spain, or Portugal, not that anyone cares about Portugal. I'll quit, we can make jokes. Portuguese chicks are hot. All right, look at Spain. Just pull up a map and look at it. If you've paid any attention at all, reading history, maybe listening to my show, you're probably a history nut of some kind. You know, you can find certain locations out there and say to yourself, oh, people are going to fight over that. When you're Spain, just north of Africa, attached to continental Europe, nice little dock to head out into the Pacific, you have primo real estate and people are going to want what you have. That's just the way it goes. The Romans were all over Spain. And long before that, I mean, Spain is prime real estate. Look at that little sliver of water just between Spain and Africa. Do you think that's something people would be interested in? a major shipping lane like that. Yes, they were. Napoleon, one, interested in Spain for those reasons, and two, well, he was interested just because he was freaking Napoleon. And Napoleon wanted everything. Invade Spain. Actually, to be fair, Spain joins with Napoleon and invades Portugal. Spain, really not understanding what they were facing, not understanding who they were allying with. And this is a complicated story. It's not about that today. So I'm going to skip right to the part where Napoleon decides he's going to go ahead and put his brother in charge of Spain and kick the guy who was there out. And now the Spanish are in an uproar saying, whoa, that's not right. Long story short, Napoleon, by this point, by the point in our story, he's running things. The invasion was 1807, but by the time of our story, 1812, that's Napoleon's. This whole area is Napoleon's. Spain is fighting hard back against him, but not necessarily in an organized fashion. I mean, not necessarily the government. This is one of the biggest guerrilla wars in the history of mankind. And actually, there's some really cool stories from it I could tell you today, but that is not our story today. And I have so much I need to get to for regular news. I don't have time. But just know the Spanish people, to their credit, during the Peninsula War, to their credit, and in the end, it actually is going to burn them in this story, but to their credit, they were going after the French. They didn't take this French occupation, French control, and just sit back and say, oh, it's fine. No, 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 no. They were viciously fighting back against it. Enter Britain. Britain is obviously very aware of the Napoleon threat. Britain has plenty of a history against France by this point. They've pretty much always been fighting. And you know what? We have to pause for just a brief moment here. Britain always seems to be aware when there's a tyrant afoot. And people don't seem to heed Britain's warnings early enough. How many times has Britain, throughout history, sounded the alarm about this tyrant here, whether it's Hitler or Stalin or Napoleon or whatever it may be? Britain always seems to be sounding the alarm to everybody else. This is a problem. Step in now or this is going to be a big deal. And everybody seems to blow them off until the end. Well, they were aware of Napoleon's ambitions, and Britain was uniquely invested in stopping Napoleon. And they come up with a plan. If you look on your little map you pulled up before on the Iberian Peninsula, you will see obviously Spain takes up most of the Iberian Peninsula. But on the west coast, if you don't have a map in front of you, on the west coast of it, I don't want to call it a tiny sliver, but the left side, but not all the left side is Portugal. Not a country of any significance at all. I'll stop. We're going to make fun of the Portuguese a couple times today. It's fine. But seriously, the left side of it's Portugal. And if you're Britain and you know you have what? What do you have that nobody else has, including Napoleon, the best navy in the world? Your plan to take the Iberian Peninsula almost undoubtedly begins with a landing from the sea. They come up with the plan. And the plan is, let's land in Portugal and let's fight our way to two specific locations. Now, these are, I'm only going to tell you one of their names because that's where our battle takes place. But just know, if you're marching from the west coast of Portugal to the east, you're going from left to right as you look at your map, there are essentially two locations right as you enter Spain where if you control them, you control Portugal itself. They are the super highways in and out. You control that town, you control that area, you now have a foothold that can't be uprooted from Portugal unless they take the town back from you. Napoleon, I don't know if you've heard, he was no dummy. He was aware of this as well. One of these places, the location for our story today, is a place called Ciudad Rodrigo. And if you speak Spanish, you need to understand I am an educated white trash and I'm going to butcher that name throughout the show today. If you listen to this show for an education on how to habla, you have tuned into the wrong radio show, Jack. I can barely speak English. I mess up half the English words. But that's where we're going. This main fortified town, Ciudad Rodrigo. Now, who we have on the British side? Somebody I hope you've heard of before, the Duke of Wellington. And he is a savvy, savvy general. And he has a plan. All right. Do we have our own Ministry of State Security coming in America? It looks like we might have a problem here. Hang on.
Missed out?
Catch up.
JesseKellyShow.com.
If you're looking to put in some healthy habits into your lifestyle this year, maybe it's time you took the easy step first. I tell people this all the time when they're getting ready to start working out. Not that I'm the workout king, but when they start working out, people will go, haven't worked out in a year, and they'll go down to the gym and work out for an hour. Then they wake up the next day, they can't move, and they never go back. Maybe start slow and easy. One of the best things in the world you can do for your heart doesn't involve you doing anything but eating two tasty fruit snacks a day. They're called Super Beats Heart Chews. I eat mine with dinner every single night. The wife makes sure they're with my dinner every night, two of them. They taste good. They do not taste like beets. They're food-derived, and they help my heart. Help yours, too. Go to superbeats.com/Jesse. That's superbeats.com/Jesse. When you do that, get this, you get two free 30-day supplies of Super Beats. You're not going to believe Joe Biden's newest pick for his government. Actually, I take that back. You probably will believe it. Gosh, this country. Whew. We are in for quite a jaunt here. You can find me on social media at JesseKellyDC on Twitter and on Instagram. And I will obviously be kicked off soon. You'll find me on Facebook. You can find me on Parler if the commies ever allow them to have a platform again. So that's kind of cool. That's awesome, right? We'll see what the Ministry of State Security has to say if they can get approval. But back to the Iberian Peninsula. Duke of Wellington lands. He has an army. He does not have what Napoleon has. Napoleon at this point in time is fielding 500,000 men. Now, they're not all in the Iberian Peninsula. They're all spread out everywhere. But Napoleon has armies the likes of which the world has never seen before. The huge Duke of Wellington does not have that. But here's what the Duke of Wellington does have, what the United Kingdom does have that Napoleon does not. The Duke of Wellington's troops, they sign up for life. A lifetime enlistment. Do you have any idea the kind of commitment that would take? I fought with some British Royal Marines, but not fought against them. We fought with some British Royal Marines one time, and they had 12-year minimum enlistments there. You just have a different mentality. You eat, sleep, and breathe fighting. You eat, sleep, and breathe it. Duke of Wellington may not have as many men, but that's all they do. It's not a weekend thing, one weekend a month, 2 weeks out of the year. It's 24/7, I train to murder people. That's what they do. So he does have highly trained men. Back to Napoleon, though. Again, he's no idiot. He knows that Ciudad Rodrigo is a key place, so he takes it. There are still plenty of Spanish people in the city after the French take it, and you need to make a little side note in your brain because that's going to come into play later on in the story. But Napoleon takes it, and not only does he take it, it's full of stuff. And I mean full of ammo. It's full of cannon. It's full of food. It is in a great spot, and it's ready to roll. And Napoleon, realizing how critical Ciudad Rodrigo is, promptly starts fortifying it more. This is a city with two walls. Remember, it's this oval-shaped city, and it has a high wall, and on the outside of that, it has a lower wall. And we do need to, not that I want to nerd out on walls and siege stuff. Actually, I take that back. Yes, I do. Yes, I do, Chris. We took a trip to Europe a couple years ago. Yes, I realize that sounds very fancy. I've never been to Europe before, and I don't know if I'll ever go again, but I would like to if I could afford it. But it was really cool, and as you can imagine, my wife and kids had to be dragged kicking and screaming to various castles and historical parts that I wanted to see. They had a communism museum in Prague. Of course, I went and saw that. And they had various castles. And one thing that hits you about the castles is that, like, everyone can picture a castle. Everyone has a picture of one in your head. But when you actually get up next to one and you can touch it, it's so obvious. One, they place the castle in a specific spot. You know, they never put one in a hole in the ground. It was always in some elevated spot. And they would famously use terrain around you to make it harder. So you didn't have to fortify one part as much, and we'll get to that in a moment, as you did other parts, because they used natural terrain features. But another thing they did is, like the moat. We all know what a moat is, where they dig a big trench around a castle or a city. And we always, look, I'll be honest, I always thought these moats were full of crocodiles. And I was very, very, very disappointed when I found out, in general, they weren't even full of water. They were just a big ditch. And it doesn't make sense, right? Well, what's the point of that? It makes a lot more sense when you're standing by the castle and you're looking up at these walls towering over you and you're picturing yourself with a spear or maybe a musket and a bayonet in your hand, having to run up to the wall and scale something to get up there. When you're walking it, when you're at the base of it, you realize having to go down into a ditch and then back up a really steep part of the other side before you get into the wall, it is a massive disadvantage. The danger you would be under while you were in that ditch, and they would have obstacles like stakes set up in the ditch, maybe booby traps. It's a lot. Anything that slows somebody down from approaching your wall is hugely, hugely important to you. If you can put another little wall outside of your big wall, force them to scale that, how much time do you think you would have to spend as a bowman or a musket guy at this point in time? How much time do you think you would have to spend training your troops to know how to hit the top of that little outer wall every single time? Not very much. What I'm saying is you can create a real murderer's row right outside of your walls if you want. And the French did. Again, Napoleon knew exactly what he was doing. Now, the Duke of Wellington has a bit of a situation. When I say a bit of a situation, it's this. He 100% has to take Ciudad Rodrigo. He has to take this city. There's no question about it. You might as well get back on the boats and leave if you're not going to take Ciudad Rodrigo. He must take it. He must take it very, very soon because his troops are outnumbered on the Iberian Peninsula. If the French gather up and get together, he's going to get crushed. He must take it. He must take it very soon, but it's January. And we've talked about this before. You're spoiled. I'm spoiled. Tanks, snow gear, long johns, gloves, and hats. The history of warfare is a history of stopping in the wintertime, and we'll pick this thing back up again when things thaw out. They simply didn't have the gear, the logistics to pull off winter combat. But if you're the Duke of Wellington, you don't have any choice. You do winter combat, you take an impregnable fortress in the wintertime, and you take it fast, or reinforcements are going to gather and wipe you from the face of the planet. This is not an ideal situation at all. However, like I tell my kids all the time, don't bring me problems, bring me solutions. He has to. He simply has to. In real life, when it comes down to it, you don't get to send an email to the boss saying, this is going to be really difficult. In real life, get the job done by any means necessary. And he begins. And one of the first things he does as a policy on the Iberian Peninsula, well, it's genius. It's absolutely genius. The smart people in the history of mankind have realized it pays to have friends more than it pays to make enemies. You know what Napoleon would do when he would take over a place like Spain? They would loot, rape, and burn the countryside. They would. He was a conqueror, and they did things conquerors do. The Brits got there. They realized how angry the Spanish were. They realized the Spanish were anxious for someone to save them. And he needed to feed his troops, too. His troops wanted to enjoy the spoils of war, too. And yet the policy was, you treat the Spanish people like gold. And he did. And they very much came to his aid when he needed them. We will get to that. We'll try to wrap up this story because, gosh, we have some ugly stuff coming from Biden. Hang on.
The effect of this is that there is no longer a free and open social media company or site for any American to get on any longer. Because these big companies, Apple, Amazon, Google, they have just destroyed Parler is likely a billion-dollar company. Poof, it's gone. But it's more than just the financial aspect of that. Republicans have no way to communicate. If it doesn't even matter if you're a Republican or conservative, if you don't want to be regulated by left wingers that are at Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, where you get shadow banned, nobody gets to see you, they get to decide what's violent or not violent, it's preposterous. So I don't know where the hell the Department of Justice is at right now or the FBI. This is clearly a violation of antitrust, civil rights, the RICO statute. There should be a racketeering investigation on all the people that coordinated this attack on not only a company, but on all of those like us, like me, like you, Maria. I have 3 million followers on Parler. Tonight, I will no longer be able to communicate with those people.
Oh, boy. We. I tell you, they're surrounding us here just a bit. All right, before we get to that, before we get to Joe Biden's newest pick, before we get to the National Security Council focusing on us, let's finish up the Ciudad Rodrigo story here. Ciudad Rodrigo. Wellington is making friends with the Spanish. He has Spanish allies, and he needs them because now he has to move mass quantities of supplies to Ciudad Rodrigo in the wintertime, and he has to do it quickly. It works. They have huge carriage trains of stuff coming their way, and the French are not stupid. The French know he's there. But they simply don't think there's a possibility at all, and this isn't the last time this will burn them in this story, they don't think it's a possibility at all that he's going to attack in the winter because they wouldn't attack in the winter. But again, remember, the British troops are full-time troops. The French, lots of them, are not. Wellington does march. And Wellington was a guy, to his credit, absolutely obsessed with intelligence gathering, obsessed with it. He would send out, obviously, the normal kind of intelligence gathering. He would send out recon writers all over the place. But he, I mean, the British practically wrote the book on this stuff. He was doing deep cover stuff back before it was cool. He had men undercover speaking the language in every place he possibly could, all over the peninsula, finding out what the French were doing, what the French weren't doing. Now, Wellington does get to the fort, and he has an issue with the fort. You see, again, they build these things strategically. I shouldn't call it a fort, it's a city, but there's a hill on the south that's not going to work. There's a river in the west, and there's a trench in the east. Essentially, and when I say hill in the south, what I mean is a hill sloping up to the walls. You'd have to run up to the walls. It would be suicide. The north, however, had a little peak outside of it he thought he could use. And what they did was they got there and they dug in. And sieges worked like this a lot. I don't think we've ever talked about this. You would get there. Okay, you have a bunch of cannon. They're in the fort. They have a bunch of cannon. And you show up with your army. What you would do is you would dig. They called it a parallel. You would dig a parallel trench, parallel to the wall. Dig a trench parallel to the wall. Then you would fortify your guns. You have all this stuff around your cannon because they're going to be shooting at you for sure and shooting at your gun. And so you're not sitting in your trench. You're building another trench, you know, vertically, perpendicular to your current trench that gets you closer. And once you get that trench far enough, then you build another parallel through it, and then you creep your men and equipment up. You understand? You're kind of playing hopscotch. But also you need to get... This was very, very, very hazardous. The amount of casualties armies would take during this time, it was a lot. Because you're not even fighting half the time. Half your men are shooting and fighting, but the others are digging. So you're just getting bombed from the fort walls, just absolutely bombed from the fort walls. And lots of times you can't protect yourself. And they're shooting at the guns. But the trenches are advancing and advancing, and Wellington's problem is this. This process needs to be slow if you're going to protect the lives of your men. But Wellington knows he's surrounded on this peninsula by armies who will come wipe him out. He can't afford to be slow. We have to go. We have to go now. So his men are advancing faster than he wants them to, and he's not one of these jerk commanders in history who's just throwing away his men's lives. He's advancing, and he doesn't like the casualties he has to take, but he has to take them or they're all going to die. He advances and advances and advances, and finally he gets close enough. The French inside realize. Now, the French inside are well equipped, but there's not an unlimited amount of them inside. But they realize we have to ride out and do something about this or we're going to die. So they do what they call, they sally forth from the wall. They ride out and try to charge the trench. And the point of charging the trench is you want to get to the trench and blow up the British cannon. That's what you're worried about. You don't really care as much that the men are getting close. That the cannon are that close is a big deal because they're going to knock down your walls. Boom, they run into the British. The British at first are taken aback. It's a surprise attack. But then these tough-as-nails British troops dig in, and they manage to fight off the French who have to turn around and retreat. Now your trenches are close enough. Wellington famously decides he wants to knock down two different locations of wall, a couple hundred yards apart. He begins bringing up his cannons. And he starts pounding the walls and pounding the walls and pounding the walls. And finally, he has two different gaps in the wall into the town. And this is going to get to our spot in the story as I try to finish this thing up here. Picture this moment. The walls are down, but it's not as if the walls come crumbling down from a cannon and you have this gap in the wall. And the French are going to run out there and pick up all the blocks and, you know, put down some gravel so you have a nice way in. You have nothing but jagged stone and wood there. the French would famously stick a bunch of swords through a board and lay them out on the ground. So you're falling on swords and tripping on swords as you go through. They would dig little pits in the ground and put mines underneath them and blow them up as you went through. And there may not be as many French as there are British, but they know exactly which way you're going. They know which way you're going. This is what's happening. The British decide they're going to attack both breaches at the same time, and they do. They attack both breaches, and this is that moment I talked about in the beginning of, if you're a British soldier and you're running into a gap, and standing in that gap is a bunch of Frenchmen with muskets, bayonets, with boards down with swords coming out of it, with mines that just blew up the group in front of you, and you're tripping on your friend's limbs walking through. And I didn't even mention the grape shot. Think of it like a shotgun. They have those aimed at the gaps too. You're going to die. How does one possess that kind of bravery? How? Hang on, we'll finish up. Oh, this National Security Council thing is not good. It is not good. I will explain what it is here in just a second. Just let me do a couple bow-tying things on this story. The British do charge through. They do take Ciudad Rodrigo. They didn't conduct themselves well in the town. Remember, these are Spanish people really under occupation in the town. The troops, the battle had been so bloody. And we see this historically. I'm not trying to make excuses for them, but the troops, their blood was very much up by the time they entered the town, and they proceeded to do the opposite of what they'd been doing the entire time. Remember how well they treated the Spanish? Don't loot, don't rape, don't burn, don't... Well, they ruined all that when they got into Ciudad Rodrigo. It was a very, very ugly night there. It was so ugly, many of the citizens of Ciudad Rodrigo would go find British officers and invite them to come dine with them that night because they thought the officer being in the home would offer some form of protection from the troops who were going crazy. But it's not about all that. Let's go back to the beginning, to why they got there anyway. The British understood something. They understood something that every smart leader in history, every smart leader who lasted a long, long time understood. Treating the people well is a recipe for longevity. Abusing the people is a recipe to die early. It just is a fact. Before I go off on Joe Biden and National Security Agency and his new cabinet pick and this inauguration stuff and everything else, and I haven't asked Dr. Jesse a question I'm actually going to answer today. I can't let it wait till Friday. It's too good. I got to answer it today. Before I go off on any of that, just know this. I'm concerned about the pundits on the right. I'm concerned about the politicians on the right because I get they hated Trump. That's fine. Whatever. I constantly am seeing this steady stream now of not only talking down to people who voted for Donald Trump, who supported Donald Trump. I'm seeing this spike a football in their face syndrome. And this is how you're going to lose the party completely. I think we are going to see a third party. I do. Especially after this most recent impeachment. You cannot treat people poorly, even if inside, let's say you're some snooty DC politician. And deep down inside, you believe these, you know, we're all a bunch of ignorant rubes and stuff like, you know, even if you really believe that, that's fine. That's fine. You can't say it. You can't constantly mock them and abuse them and mock them and abuse them. It blows me away how people are unaware of how human nature works. You're never going to get the support of these people. You're never going to get it if you spend all your time belittling them. And you need their support. These are the people who are going to get us to the fort in the wintertime. You need their support. Stop. Stop talking down to people. And you ain't that smart anyway. You don't know what you're talking about. You people are wrong about everything. All right. Now, I honestly don't know which one I want to tackle first. Both of them are undoubtedly going to get me in trouble. Let's begin with this one here. This is a statement from Carol Lee. She's with NBC, I believe. Carol Lee, quote, Biden administration plans to make domestic terrorism the key focus of the National Security Council, according to transition officials. Been looking at ways to shift government resources for counterterrorism to combat domestic violent extremism, as the new administration is expected to call it. You know where this is going, right? You do know where this is going? Have you been watching the news for the past, week and a half since that raid on the Capitol? You saw what happened. Not that there were arrests for the raid on the Capitol. They were all public. FBI putting out a new wanted poster every other day. You saw all that, right? You saw the gigantic fence with razor wire on top of it in D.C. 30,000 troops brought in. We have, you know what, I'll try to get the audio for you. We have a Democratic representative, a Democratic congressman, Cohen is his name, talking about the Biden team needing to vet the National Guard troops because so many of them were white, and he's worried that many white guys may want to kill Joe Biden. I'm not making that up. I'll play you the audio. That's from a Democratic representative. If you're paying attention, you know how all these things are linked. How are they linked? What's coming? You know what's coming. I'll tell you in a sec.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? My drink was give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down. But you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
This is an iHeart podcast.